Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. I hope this conversation will serve you on your own path of living life fully and courageously. The inner game is our relationship to our purpose, to the contribution we want to be in bringing forth a more beautiful world. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people grow personally and how that strengthens their organizations and businesses and projects to make a bigger difference. Our guest today is Michael Brownlee, author of The Local Food Revolution. He's been deeply involved in the transition movement and the local food movement, and has come to an exciting moment in that journey. And really glad to have you here today, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you, Gwen. It's great to be with you.
When did you begin to become aware of a relationship to a spiritual dimension of life? When did that show up for you?
I would have to say that it showed up from the time I was very, very young, but I would not have thought of it at that time as anything spiritual. You know, stuff was happening to me that I did not understand. There was, for instance, a long series of recurring dreams about the future that started happening when, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
I certainly didn't understand any of that. And only many decades later could I even think of that as spiritual. But now I understand it certainly was. I was being shown things. I was being guided.
I'm curious, were those dreams frightening or exciting?
I would say not frightening, but disturbing.
Mm.
And maybe I can just share one.
Sure.
Very, very quickly, because it's relevant. I'm standing on a high cliff looking out over the ocean, and down below me there's a beautiful beach, and there are people at the beach enjoying themselves. And it's an incredibly beautiful scene. But as I look out far in the distance, I can see the series of waves coming towards the beach that are really huge.
Mm.
And they start hitting the beach. At first, they're not that big, but each one is larger and larger. Because I can see out there, I can see that the waves are going to get totally overwhelming. And I try to holler down to warn people at the beach they need to get out of there. Their lives are going to be in danger, and no one can hear me. And the waves come and get bigger and bigger. And finally, there's nothing I can do but get to higher ground myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then I wake up. And so that dream came again and again and again, just haunting. And now that dream begins to make sense.
Right.
You know, we are living in that time of great waves of change.
And you've mentioned what an influence Paul Revere was, and the gentleman who wrote, what was it?
Thomas Paine.
And I think of you in that way, as sort of creating this charge, not so much a warning as an invitation, a very urgent, powerful invitation to play a bigger game for all of us to recognize the importance of this moment and what our role is. And I wonder if that's how that feels to you now, the meaning of that dream.
Yes, and there were other related kinds of dreams that had the same sort of theme. And for a long time, I thought that my job was to warn people about, you know, the future that was coming, to prepare people. And what I eventually came to understand, that it was much more about finding those people who are already feeling these changes within
right.
them, connecting with them, empowering them, supporting them, and linking with them, because we have something to do here together. And it's much more than meeting the challenge of today's problems. It's much more about looking deeply into the future and the contribution that we need to make to the future of, really, the future of life on
right.
this planet.
And it occurs to me that this revolution that you speak of is a very different kind of game than the revolutions of the past.
Yes.
It requires a very different, I don't know, you could call it a skill set maybe, but more so I think of it as a way of being, as a kind of an evolutionary presence that we may need to bring to it in order for it to be what it needs to be. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I'll try. I think the first thing to say is that, you know, we are learning that there is an evolutionary force that's moving in our universe and in the world here, but that evolutionary force has a direction. And we can learn to align with that direction. We can learn to become a vehicle for that evolutionary force.
And what does that require?
What does that require? Well, we're learning that because we don't know what that requires. We're just discovering, you know, that that's even a possibility. You know, it's only been in the last several decades that we've understood that there is such an evolutionary force. And we're just beginning to realize what that looks like and what that feels like. So,
what does it feel like to you?
Boy, that's a very tough question. Oddly, it feels like a confidence that underneath it all, there is meaning, there is purpose, there is sure challenges along the way. But this is all going somewhere.
Right.
It's taking us somewhere. Yeah. And we're...
Somewhere good. Gooder.
more good than we're capable of imagining
right.
at this point. You know. So it's extraordinary, you know, to realize that we're part of something much bigger than most people in the world can even think about at this point.
What are the pictures of where we're going? What can we start to imagine? It's not so much what it looks like, but what it feels like. What are the principles and the values and the feelings of where this revolution can take us or where you'd love it to take us?
Hmm. 25 words or less.
Yeah, right.
I think a fundamental principle that has gotten lost in our society is that life is truly sacred.
Mm.
And it's so essential for us to reconnect with the sacredness of life. And that's part of the power of food, because it brings us into connection with that sacredness of life and starts to open that up for us. So to begin to speak about what it feels like is to think about those moments in our lives where we have touched the sacred or the sacred has touched us. And to be able to live our lives with that being present basically all the time. That's where we're going. That's the discipline that we actually need to develop, to seek, to reach for, to open to the sacred in whatever we're doing. So that's a beginning place.
As you were speaking, I was thinking about what is it about food that is so beautiful? It grows and becomes this, you know, gorgeous whatever it is, apple or pepper or bean, and it comes into its fullness and it goes through this whole incredible process only to nurture and nourish whoever
yes.
will take that or whatever will take that into itself
yes.
as fuel. And that's such an incredible expression if we thought of our lives like that, you know, becoming as full and as juicy and as incredibly, you know, expressed as possible only to nurture and give and be generous. And and unconditional?
I think it's so important. We talk kind of unconsciously about how we grow vegetables, farmers grow food. Well, we don't grow that. We nurture the growth, but the growth happens.
Right.
It is a gift. And so for those beings, those vegetables or those animals that give their lives, it is a life of service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're beginning to discover as well, that our life is completely about service. And we can talk about different things that we serve, but at the bottom, you could say we're serving this evolutionary force. We are servants of evolution itself.
That's a beautiful place to take a quick pause. This is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Michael Brownlee, author of the newly released The Local Food Revolution. And we're talking about how we bring the strength of our spiritual selves to leading a shift in the world. And I'd love to ask what that looks like on a daily basis. What are the practices that strengthen you, that bring the sacred more fully into your life so that you can be acting from that place?
What strikes me at the moment is that's becoming an increasingly difficult question to answer, because we often think of practice as something that we do, like we sit down and we meditate for 30 minutes twice a day or something like that, like I have a spiritual practice.
Right.
But I think what we're shifting to is a place where spiritual practice is actually so deeply integrated into every aspect of our lives that it's never not happening, and we never think about it as spiritual practice. I can't say I'm anywhere close to that, but I can see that that's part of what's happening. And I think it's partly learning how to yield oneself to the flow of evolution that is attempting to emerge within us. So part of spiritual practice means learning not to resist that, not to stand in the way of that, not to damage ourselves so that we cannot be vehicles for that.
Treating yourself in a sacred way.
Yes. We are so good at self-deprecation in our world today. We are so separated from what is essential, what is holy, what is sacred, that we really beat ourselves up all the time. And we have to learn to let all of that go and to begin to realize that we are far greater than we ever imagined, and we have far greater responsibility than we ever imagined, and that it's time for us to get on with it.
Right.
And to accept that responsibility and to accept the challenge of learning what we call the discipline of being an evolutionary catalyst, being an agent, if you will, of evolution.
I so value those like yourself and your spouse, Lynette Marie, who have devoted their lives or felt a calling to give themselves to their own evolution as beings. And because of that, to come to this place where now that's this ongoing experience for you, where this discipline is something that is no longer something you have to will to have there. It's there. It's anchored. It's the ground of being from which you operate. And because of that, something very powerful becomes possible. I guess what I would like to hear is, what were some of the pivotal steps or periods of your life along the way that were really instrumental in bringing you to this place?
My life is flashing before my eyes here. very difficult question to answer. Maybe I can just say that one of those moments came. I was going through my midlife crisis, which was the most powerful, most wonderful experience imaginable. It wasn't anything like a crisis. And I was sitting in a workshop one day as I was turning 40 years old, and I got a message that was just overwhelming to me. And essentially the message was, your job is to make a fundamental contribution to human evolution. And I just about collapsed under the weight of that. I couldn't even imagine what that might look like or what that might mean. And it's taken many, many years to even begin to understand what that message meant and how I might respond to that. And maybe most importantly, to understand that that was not a message just for me. That was a message for many of us here who have been prepared for this role at this time, this crucial time in human history, where there is an opportunity to make a fundamental contribution to human evolution. And that's really the inner game that we're called to here. Certainly, on the face of it, that's an overwhelming challenge. But if we can begin to open to taking that challenge on, that's pretty big.
For those who might think, oh, I couldn't do that, or I, you know, who am I to think I can do such and such, or I'm far too imperfect. How do we get past that to start to offer ourselves in sacred service?
I'm always pretty reluctant to answer how questions.
I know, we so want that blueprint. What's the answer?
But the beginning of the answer to that is to make a decision and a commitment that that's what your life is about, and that you are willing to learn whatever you need to learn, to develop whatever skills you have to develop, to do whatever it takes to get there.
What I've seen over the years is in people who have this calling, who often also have a lot of self-judgment that, you know, oh, I'm going to mess it up. I'm not going to do it right. And that can block them from doing, you know, what is their gift to do. You know, I'm wondering how we can support each other. You know, I'm imagining that in your relationship with Lynette Marie, there is a lot of support of one another to play at the level that you play. And how can we, first of all, surround ourselves with the people who will play that role for us and be in that game together with us? What can that look like? What do you notice that makes a difference for others in terms of the relationships and the community that can help them?
It all seems like a really big mystery to me, sorting all of that out. But one of the things that I have been discovering is that so often we assume that we are alone in all of this. Even though we're with other people, maybe in very close, intimate relationships, we still assume that we're alone. And this is the big misconception that will fall away in time as we discover that we are supported. You know, that there are people, there are beings, there are spiritual beings, that there are angels who are intensely focused on our becoming. You know, they have great expectations of us, and they're doing what they can to support us. But we are the ones who ultimately must fulfill what they've set in motion. So for many of us, this looks like ancestors whose lives, whose service, whose sacrifices have made who we are possible, have made what we are to do possible. So we have all of that behind us. We have the whole arc of 13.8 billion years of evolution behind us, you know.
So and we are present with us.
Present with us. Right. We are part of that. We are an expression of that. And so part of the challenge is learning how to accept that, that's who we are. And we are certainly not just individuals here. We are part of something much bigger than we have ever imagined before.
I would love to ask you if there's anything you'd like to say in closing, either about what you're up to and what you'd like people to know about, or just like what you'd like people to take away from this conversation.
Maybe I can say that certainly it appears that we are entering into a very dark era of human experience here. And many have suggested that we are, in fact, entering a new dark age here, that this will be a pretty tough time on this planet. And certainly as we see the impacts of global warming finally beginning to arrive, we can easily imagine that. But this is also a time, it's also a moment when evolutionary breakthrough can happen. And it appears to me that that's exactly why we're here, you know, that we are in service to that breakthrough. So as we live in the dying moments of a civilization that has caused so much damage on this planet, we are also, as we're hospicing the old, we're midwifing the birth of what will ultimately become a new civilization that will be much more deeply connected with the sacred than this very temporary civilization has been.
That is a beautiful realization. Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you for your work and for your commitment and for all that you are.
Thank you, Gwen.
For you listening, I wanted to let you know I've set up a Facebook page. If you'd like to continue this conversation and comment or ask a question, that would be fabulous. You will find it at The Inner Game. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Clouds are swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray. Winds are restless, trees are patient, you, my child, are away. Waves are crashing, rivers churning, planets twirling, stars ablaze, storms are raging, atoms whirling, and you, my child, far away. To perceive these wondrous things, to count the beats of a blackbird's wings, to tell a story. dancing, singing. Seeds are hopeful, dewdrops fleeting, oak trees crooked, redwoods straight, and they are not known to the sleeping, but you, my child, are awake. You, my child, are awake. You, my child.